Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the briefing. The Secretary General arrived in the Russian Federation earlier today. He is now in Sochi on Russia's Black Sea coast, and tomorrow he is scheduled to meet President Putin and Foreign Minister Lavrov there. After his visit to Russia ends on 19th May, the Secretary General will travel to Mozambique. During his stay in the capital, Maputo, the Secretary General will hold talks with Mozambican government officials, including President Armando Guebuza and Foreign Minister Oldemiro Baloyi. He will also participate in a roundtable event on the future we want, Millennium Development Goals post-2015 and Agenda 2025, and will visit a school on the theme of the Unite to End Violence Against Women and Girls campaign, Education and Youth. The Secretary General will conclude his visit to Mozambique on May 22nd. I have a readout of the Secretary General's cell phone conversations with the Prime Minister of Israel and the President of Palestine. In the past 2 days, the Secretary General has had phone conversations with both the Prime Minister of Israel and the President of Palestine. They discussed the Middle East peace process and the situation on the ground, including in East Jerusalem. The Secretary General strongly encouraged the ongoing efforts towards the resumption of Israeli-Palestinian peace talks and expressed his hope that they will lead to a substantial peace initiative soon. He stressed the importance for the parties to create the conditions conducive to the resumption of meaningful negotiations. Regarding the recent tensions in East Jerusalem, and more particularly restrictions of access to Muslim and Christian holy sites, the Secretary General conveyed his concerns to the Israeli authorities, urging Israel to abide by its obligations under international humanitarian law. The Secretary General stressed to both leaders the importance of respect for the religious freedom of all, and that worshippers of all faiths should have access to their holy sites. With regard to the regional situation, the Secretary General reiterated that all should act responsibly and abide by international law to prevent escalation. We received questions yesterday about the declaration of a state of emergency in parts of Nigeria. I can say that the Secretary General is aware of the decision by the Nigerian government to declare a state of emergency in the three northeastern states of Nigeria. The Secretary General has been and remains very concerned about the continued violence and deteriorating security situation in northeastern Nigeria, which poses a threat to national peace and security. He calls on all extremist groups to cease their attacks. The Secretary General reiterates his firm conviction that no objective can ever justify such use of violence. He underscores the need for all concerned to fully respect human rights and to safeguard the lives of all Nigerians. Martin Kobler, the Secretary General's Special Representative for Iraq, welcomed the relocation of a first group of 14 Camp Liberty residents to Albania. He said the arrival last night of the residents was an encouraging first step in the relocation of the group of 210 residents that the Albanian government has agreed to receive. He thanked the government of Albania and encouraged other member states to come forward and to receive residents in their countries as well. The humanitarian coordinator for Yemen, Ismailul Sheikh Ahmed, said today at a press conference in Geneva that stability in Yemen may collapse if the humanitarian crisis in the country is not properly addressed. Over half of the population of Yemen needs humanitarian assistance, including 10 million people who do not have enough to eat and 6 million who do not have access to basic health care. There are also more than 340,000 internally displaced people in Yemen. The humanitarian coordinator said that 1 million children suffer from acute malnutrition and that more than 15,000 of them are so malnourished they may die if they don't receive immediate assistance. 89 humanitarian organizations are working in Yemen to help 7.7 million vulnerable people across the country. However, the humanitarian appeal for this year, which requires $716 million, is only 28% funded. The Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says that tropical cyclone Mahasen has been downgraded to a tropical storm as it has weakened in the past 24 hours. In Bangladesh, an estimated 1 million people were evacuated last night and this morning ahead of the storm, which made landfall north of Chittagong. The UN is committed to working with the government to provide support. In Myanmar, while the storm has moved further away from the country, rain is still expected. Aid organizations have some 250 staff on standby to respond. The government estimates that nearly 78,000 people in Rakhine State have been relocated. Assessment teams are expected to visit affected areas as soon as possible after the storm subsides. Monitoring continued today at various camps, and community leaders, religious leaders, and international aid organizations are working together to help alleviate the concerns of people who have been resistant to moving to safer areas. The Security Council held consultations this morning on the work of its Sanctions Committee dealing with Resolution 1718 concerning the Democratic People's Republic of Korea and the one dealing with sanctions in Sudan. And as you may be aware, tomorrow will be marked by millions of people around the world as the International Day Against Homophobia. And so I will be joined by Michel Sidibé, the Executive Director of the Joint United Nations Program on HIV and AIDS, and Maharit Kohonen-Sharif, the Deputy Head of the New York Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, who will brief on the issue of homophobia. Questions, please.
Thank you, Eduardo. In the Adamawa State in Nigeria, since there's been an army curfew, I'm wondering what UN teams are doing to ensure food aid to the civilians that are being affected since they implemented that curfew.
Well, I'd have to check with OCHA. You might want to check with OCHA on that. I don't have any information on that right now. What I do have is a statement I read that we issued last night in terms of the imposition of martial law. Mr. Abadi?
Thank you, Eduardo. The plan for the sustainable recovery for Mali contains 12 priorities, including territorial integrity, peace, development, security, etc. Does the Secretary General think that it is realistic to plan for the elections in July in the country?
Well, that is what is planned, and it's on course. The Secretary General has called for elections to be held as soon as possible. You need to have a representative government in order to implement many of the changes you want to implement. And right now, you don't have that. You also need the territorial integrity of the country to be guaranteed, which is why we're waiting for the forces to arrive. Edie?
Two questions, Eduardo. First, there seems to be some confusion on the UN death toll in Syria. The President of the General Assembly yesterday used the figure 80,000, a figure that the Prime Minister of Britain has also used, yet the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights has not raised the death toll from 70,000. Could you try and clear up this confusion?
Well, we'll try and find out. Obviously, it's very difficult to get exact figures on the ground since we don't have anybody there really in a position to assess how many people have died. So we depend on a variety of sources. Those sources have to be evaluated. The information has to be collated. And we'll see if we can get some kind of a figure from the Secretariat. But right now, it's a very fluid situation. Many people continue to die every day, and that's the reason why the Secretary General continues to call for an immediate end to the violence. Another question?
Yeah, on the Africa trip, is he going anywhere after Madagascar? Mozambique, I'm sorry.
If we have anything to announce, we'll announce it. Right now, we've got Russia, and he's got Mozambique, and that trip ends on the, what did I say, the 22nd of May. Matthew?
Actually, I'm sorry, I've seen that MINUSCO has announced that he's going to go to the DRC. So I wanted to know, was that wrong?
Matthew, as you know,
yeah,
Secretary General's trips are announced from headquarters. We have not announced anything. If and when we have something to announce, we will announce it.
Okay.
I imagine you have another question.
I do. I wanted to ask you, I know that the Deputy Secretary General met with Riyad Mansour of Palestine and at least three permanent representatives of Arab countries. And I wanted to know what came up, one, if there's possible to get a readout. I understand that they met with the DSG instead of the Secretary General due to scheduling, but is it possible to get, one, some readout, and two, whether the Secretary General, as I've been told, and was undertook to make calls to both Israel and Palestine following that meeting?
Well, as I read out the readout of the Secretary General, he did call the Prime Minister of Israel and the President of Palestine. So it's there in the readout. That is a readout of what we have on that situation.
Okay, very good. All right. And on this issue that arose yesterday in the debate on the Syria resolution in the General Assembly, where Ambassador Jafari of Syria held up an email, which he says is from a, I've learned more about it since asking at yesterday's noon briefing. He says it's from a UN, you know, staff person in Damascus, too high up in DPKO, is what he said, stating that the Syrian opposition ambassador, quote unquote, in Doha was involved and in some way in the kidnapping of UN peacekeepers. Is there any UN response? It seems like it's a very serious charge. I understand you can't reopen the negotiation, but do you deny that the UN is aware that the Syrian opposition ambassador in Doha was a part of the kidnapping?
Matthew, we don't comment on leaked documents.
I mean, forget that he waived the email. I guess I'm asking you, is it the UN's understanding that the Syrian opposition that's named in the resolution adopted yesterday was involved in the kidnapping of UN peacekeepers?
Matthew, we're not going to comment on the modalities of the negotiations that took place for obvious reasons. Edie?
Eduardo, on the BBC had a report today on the alleged use of chemical weapons in another place in Syria, and I wondered whether there had been any progress at all in getting the UN team into Syria.
Well, negotiations continue, and the team continues to do its work outside of Syria, receiving information from a variety of sources. And I imagine if the BBC has anything to share with them, they will take it into consideration, and it'll be part of their analysis. Okay, one more question?
Sure. I guess there was an announcement yesterday about this, in South Sudan, the UN's concern about attacks and looting. Now the Yao Yao group has said that they have laid siege to Pibor. Do you have any update on terms of what either UNMISS with its peacekeepers is doing to protect, both civilians and aid operations? And is it true that Pibor is under siege?
Well, what I can tell you is the situation in Pibor remains tense. The UN mission has a full-time presence in Pibor and is continuously monitoring the security situation, particularly in respect to the few remaining residents. The mission is prepared to assist and protect civilians under threat in the current period, as well as preparing to assist and protect them should residents decide to return to their homes. That's what I have on Pibor. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Have a good afternoon.